You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to the Daily Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and it is August 21st, 2025, and we're going to talk about something that we're told is not going on anymore, but in fact is. Something that dominated the front page for years, maybe 10 years ago, but just because it disappeared doesn't mean it's not still going on, or even worse, elsewhere. And that's the debt crisis in Greece. Debt crisis, plutocracy, and the fraud of liberal democracy is the title of this talk. Some of you remember a long time ago, I think it was almost 20 years ago, 05, I wrote one of the few English language defenses of the Greek military government. It came to an end in 1974. Post-1974 was a flurry of public borrowing. Frankly, the military government was very successful. Under the army, Greece was stable, high rates of growth, and low unemployment. Military state promoted economic development, especially in rural areas where they themselves came from, neglected by previous governments and subsequent governments. Westernized elites or the oligarchs focused mostly on urban industrial development and mostly now financial. That's why it remained popular, and it was only the problem with Cyprus that brought it down, nothing specifically about their domestic policy in Greece. The Greek debt crisis came into existence because the very same oligarchs returned with no checks on their power. Greece is an extreme example of how you're either going to be an oligarchy or a military royal state. The military government, its members were ideologically driven in the best of senses. They knew what their opposition was, this small urban clique of international financiers. Prior to their takeover, as well as after their takeover, Greece became a dependent state. In particular, the debt crisis that got on the front page came out of the 2008-2009 collapse of the American mortgage market and the insolvency of the regime's banks. All of Europe, of course, had to adjust to the American depression. It had tremendous consequences in Greece, high unemployment, inflation, and especially there, a substantial decrease in living standards. The worst thing that the Greeks ever did was attempt to become part of the Eurozone, using the Euro as their marker. Of course, they were already part of NATO and the EU. You know, I've made a big deal about the lies that come out of the American Bureau of Labor Statistics. One of the things that makes this Greek case stand out is how the Greek government was lying about their debt levels and inflation levels. And that actually gets complicated. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. But we've been told that that ended in 2018 with the full lifting of capital controls that had been imposed by the IMF. But it's not quite true. Greek debt remains at about 150% of GDP. Elsewhere in Europe, of course, it's much worse. And then COVID hit. But if this is a crisis in Greece, how much worse is it for Americans? So the problem here is liberal international capitalism. using its dependent parties on the ground to ram through its policies. Since 2020, the Great Reset has been imposed on these countries, usually with politicians having no idea what's going on. But the Greek case helped redefine IMF policy and what austerity is. I don't think Greek elections can be taken seriously. Unpopular leaders are constantly voted into power. You have foreign money flooding into the country. This is typical of liberal democracy. The legislature becomes a stalemate. That's been the case for a long time in Greece under the oligarchs, either then or now, as an economy that's ineffective, corrupt, and unfortunately closely tied to the IMF. Greece was and is facing total dissolution. I say, and I said then, and I say now, the only way out is a military coup, the return of the monarchy, and the orientation of her economy towards Russia and China. The Greek numbers seem tame compared to Western Europe today. Military government saw much better numbers than what came immediately afterwards. You had a massive borrowing streak after 1974. Between 1980 and 1993, the debt rose from 28.6 to 111.6% of GDP. That's huge. This era was dominated by Andreas Papandreou. A lot of non-productive spending, increasing without sufficient revenue, leading to borrowing. The two governments, Papandreou and Karamanlis. Karamanlis, by the way, is who the U.S. wanted to install after the military, if they had their way. Back then, they were still using the drachma. But these were liberals. Liberal policies of people like Mitsotakis were told that they improved Greece's balance sheets. High growth rates after 1989. Even in the 90s, debt began to decrease. According to Eurostat, which is the big insurance, European insurance statistical manual, government deficit decreased from 9.1% of GDP in 1995 to 3.1% in 1999. That was the government deficit, the budget deficit. Public debt decreased from 97% to 94% in that same period. I probably don't have to say this, but the difference between the deficit and the debt, the deficit is just year by year. It concerns the actual budget that you have to spend more than you bring in. The debt is what accumulates over time. We're told that Greeks increased their tax revenues during this period. They restrained their expenditures, even created a surplus. But apparently none of it was true. Or at least it was an exaggeration. Eventually, the Minister of Finance in 2004, George Aglauskoufis, had to proceed with an economic inventory following pressure by the Eurostat, the statistical agency, because they started to question these numbers. It was an audit, and it revealed very expenditures concealed by the previous government. They fudged the numbers. This did a lot of damage to their credit, both literally and figuratively. And it led to 3 years of overt surveillance by the EU. Greece hasn't been an independent country in a very long time. The oligarchs simply lied to please the European Union. And statistics were manipulated with a little help from Goldman Sachs, we'll get to here in a minute. So Eurostat eventually altered, had to go back and alter those deficit figures. Because what was happening is that the oligarchs were trying to satisfy the Maastricht convergence criteria to be a part of the Eurozone. That certainly didn't suit Greek interests, but it suited their interests. And through many methods, they were able to conceal deficit numbers, debt numbers, expenditures, etc. a lot of off-budget things, unrecorded expenditures from 96 to 2001 and beyond. But after the crisis of 2008, the GDP went from 242 billion euros, and there, it's very close to the dollar. Right now it's like 0.9 to $1. It's even closer back then. It went down to 176 billion in 2015. You had massive negative growth rates. So they couldn't borrow anywhere. So Eurostat went back and redid the figures. Now, if the Greeks can do it, I'm not sure why the Americans are seen as somehow beyond it. Not necessarily with the currency swap that the Goldman Sachs did with the Greeks, but simply by manipulative and bad methodology. Truth of the matter is that since October of 2008, unemployment rose sharply. GDP began to decline. Capitalization of the banks, 28 billion euros had to be done. But European banks, where most of this debt, by the way, was owed to, they had been deceived. They wouldn't lend them anymore, so they said, go to the IMF. At this point, and within a few years, the Greek economy was relegated to developing world status. That is to say, third world. So in 2009, Standard & Poor's, the rating agency, which I have my own problems with, downgraded Greece's long-term credit rating from A to A minus, somewhere in the middle, which would increase the country's borrowing costs. After the 2009, the European elections, there was an attempt to refinance the debt. You had huge budget deficits, and therefore the debt was growing substantially. 110% of GDP to 125% of GDP within 1 year. That's exactly what they were trying to hide, and they couldn't do it anymore. Fitch downgraded the Greek economy to BBB+. Standard & Poor's even went lower. And Moody's did the same thing. So Greece couldn't borrow at normal interest rates anymore. It fell to what we call speculative grade status, meaning that we have no idea if they're going to default or not. So Greece had no other choice at this point than to go to the IMF, the European Commission, and the European Central Bank. And those three institutions became known as the Troika, and that's not a compliment. The finance minister, Papakonstantinou, or the Bank of Greece governor, Provopoulos, in 2010 signed the loan facility agreement with the Eurozone countries and a standby agreement with the IMF. And the price of all of this was that this Troika now, the European Central Bank, the IMF, the EU, would take full control of Greek finances and hence Greek, the Greek government. So, January of 2010, George Papandreou, the Prime Minister, went to Davos, Switzerland, for the World Economic Forum. There, he came under very intense pressure to take immediate action. And that's when the austerity packages first started coming in. Austerity, meaning you have a huge debt. Therefore, you have to start selling off things to pay it. They start cutting salaries wherever you can. And all of that money goes into the hands of your creditors. Salary freezes, 10% cut in benefits, overtime travel allowances for government workers. And this is when the protests began, the Greek Workers' Union, on February 10th. These were all pushed by Davos, and of course they did what they were told. The first group back then, this is when it was on front page news, the austerity that was now placed on Greece, any Christmas or Easter bonuses were cut by 30%. 12% reduction in all state benefits to anyone, 7% reduction in any all state salaries. Value added tax increase from 4.5% to 21%. Gasoline was taxed, 15% increase. And imported cars, 30% tariff. And as always, austerity is meant to pay the banks back. It's not meant to help the society at all. So I'm not sure why people think that this is a way to assist Greece. This is a way to have them pay their creditors. Of course, everything got worse, so Greece had to ask for more money from the same sources. And it was agreed to, but under even stricter conditions. And really the same as I just mentioned, but worse. The elimination of some pensions. Increased VAT taxes. Increase in taxes on fuel, cigarettes, and all kinds of beverages, at least 10% or more. Property price taxes. For some reason, another 10% increase in the tariff on imported cars. Reduction in the minimum wage across the board. And increasing the retirement age to 65. Today, it's 67. If you remember a few years ago in France, that caused huge outpourings of discontent. It was no different here. You had a nationwide strike. May 5th of 2010, you had massive demonstrations all over the place. IMF agreed to this. And of course, as you might expect, unemployment, inflation began to soar. Small businesses became a thing of the past. And it just got worse over time. The government submitted a what they call a multi-bill in December of 2010, which is essentially rubber stamping of all of this. They had no choice in the matter. Making it easier to fire state employees. The PASOK government, that's the so-called Panhellenic Socialist Movement, which is not Panhellenic and certainly not socialist. And the debt went up. Again, the point isn't to assist the Greeks. It's a bailout of the banks. If you remember at the time, it was called a bailout of Greece. That's never what it was. The economy shrank at this point by almost 5%. The point was looting the economy, not helping it. So you had public demonstrations all over the place. You had all kinds of citizen movements, including the I Refuse to Pay movement. You had tolls everywhere that they wouldn't pay. The real economy continued to deteriorate. Unemployment continued to soar. The official numbers were absolute bullshit, just like the American numbers are. At this point, you're talking about 25% for adults, 40, 50% for youth, at a minimum, within a couple years here. And Davos again, the Goldman and their friends, the Troika, IMF, ECB and EU, increased taxes. I mean, you know, they took control over the entire government. Even higher, VAT taxes, increases in housing prices, higher taxes for freelancers and professionals. All kinds of tax increases for combating unemployment, or whatever they pretended it was for. Again, they made it easier to fire people. They eliminated a lot of the unionization. They eliminated the period of time where you had to wait to fire someone. Those without professional experience will be paid a salary 20% lower than the limit that was found in their master contract. So in other words, they took over Greek society. Of course, all that meant was there was going to be a new loan. Now, 158 billion euros. And all that meant was Fitch and Moody's downgraded Greece to almost default status. It got so bad that the German finance minister, Wolfgang Schäuble, said, maybe you should leave the Eurozone. Which is, I don't think I've ever come across that anywhere. That maybe you're not ready for this. even though it's his friends that created it. The finance minister, Evangelos Venizelos, no relation. But now Greece is dependent. At least the regime is dependent. And they said, well, you're going to go along with this, or we're not going to pay any more bailouts. So things got worse and worse and worse. So the IMF can say that the Greeks are voluntarily increasing their austerity. Taxes on electric, pension cuts to the bone, massive salary cuts, especially in the private sector. That bill was rammed through 154 to 144 in the Greek parliament. Again, the point was to pay off banks who made a fortune on a lot of this. However, they did do one thing that private individuals, that is to say private creditors, will voluntarily accept a 50% write-down on Greek bonds. But there are other ways that they could make money. They had to recapitalize the banks, the Financial Stability Fund, 1 trillion euros. The opposition parties in the parliament condemned it, but the minute they took over, they did what they were told. This is an extreme version of this. The minute they were voted in, the Syriza party, the so-called radical left party, coalition, came into power, they immediately went along with all of this. They were dependent on it at this point. There were talks about a referendum. I don't think it would have mattered, because they did have one a little later, and it didn't matter. The Troika advised that a coalition government be formed of all parties. So PASOK, New Democracy, and the semi-nationalist Laos create a new government. That's to create the notion that there was full consensus in all of Greek society. Unemployment had passed 20% now, even in official terms. It got so bad that you had increasing incidences of malnutrition among students in schools. In 2012, the Ministry of Education had to deal with this, but that's how much had been cut. 2015 was the cutoff date, and it was way beyond that. Hundreds of thousands of jobs. There were no more corporate or union contracts, there's only individual ones. Massive cuts to pensions, benefits, health spending, defense, state functions, and I note one thing, elections. In other words, the oversight of elections was slashed. Workers' housing and home organizations was abolished. On and on and on. I'm not sure how anyone could win an election under these circumstances. Well, they sent a lot of their nationalist rivals to prison to stay afloat. The Troika was running the country. 2013, there was an increase in retirement age yet again. Pension reduction. The total abolition of all union agreements. The abolition of all Christmas and Easter bonuses. No notices for layoffs or firings. Zero. Could have been the case in Greece before. Family allowances, all that. Increases of taxes on energy, increases even on photovoltaics or solar cells. And then, one of the worst, 25 euro fee for hospital admission. The socialized medicine was completely dismantled. So Greece had the worst of both worlds. They had all the problems of socialized medicine, along with all the problems of the insurance system. Somehow, though, it all passed in 2012. Now, the so-called opposition party, Syriza, won with 36.34% of the vote. They created a coalition government. Yet the Syriza, despite their alleged rejection of austerity, still wanted total European integration. They backed the IMF fully. The only nationalist party that mattered was the Greek Solution. They had 10 seats in parliament that opposed the Davos agenda. despite being pro-Israel. The Golden Dawn was in prison, I think, by this point. Golden Dawn, in the midst of all of this, our party, the National Socialist Party, was the third largest party in Greece. Had 21 MPs after 2012. But most of its parliamentary delegation was sent to prison in 2020, which shouldn't surprise anyone at this point. The worst, most obnoxious part of this was the slashing of the healthcare system. Peter Koenig wrote back in 2018, "Public hospitals and schools are either privatized or closed because of lack of a budget. Medication is scarce as part of imposed import restrictions imposed by Greece's lovely European neighbors or allies or overseas masters. Specialized and expensive medication, for example cancer medication, are especially scarce. People die from the flu, from colds, from pneumonia. Even intestinal diseases that could normally be healed as a matter of routine, there are very few antibiotics available. Austerity, budget cuts, thanks to the major banks in Europe." Now, there actually was a referendum in 2015. And under the so-called opposition government that pretty much did what they're told. This was their symbolic. They're going to put all this to a vote of the population. It had been floated before, but no one wanted it because they knew it would happen. In this case, July 5th, bailout conditions were rejected by a majority of over 61% to 39%. And that was the case in all of Greece's regions. And so the Troika, those who controlled all of this, shrugged their shoulders. And the new government under Tsipras reached an agreement on July 13th, which that, you know, less than 10 days later, for a bailout with even harsher austerity conditions than the ones already just rejected by the voters. It didn't mean anything. Have all the referenda you want. That's not the point here. These people aren't in control of anything. February 2012, 20,000 Greeks were homeless. 20% of the shops in the historic center of Athens had been closed. The OECD in 2015 said that 20% of Greeks didn't have the necessary capital to cover their daily expenses. Suicides went through the roof. It increased by 36% from 2009 to 2011. But a lot of these same people were elected and reelected. And we've talked about this many times here. Let me give you just, I can't get into it in any depth. But the election system in Greece is secret. The company is called Singular Logic. That's the company that controls Greek elections. It's a Bill Gates property. For 30 years, they've been collaborating with the Greek government. Electronically controls the process and results of the elections. The contract has never been disclosed. No one knows how the counting of Greek citizens' votes is processed. It's likely to stay that way. Or presidential decrees. Singular Logic actually is then bought by Marfin Investment Group. And then that eventually went to Piraeus Bank. You had a lot of mysterious deaths. And then that bank transferred the shares to the American fund KKP. And who were they? Jerome Kohlberg, founder and honorary president, member of many Zionist lobbies. Of course, non-Greek. Henry Kravis, CEO, member of the committees created by the Rockefeller Foundation. George Rosenberg Roberts, married to a Goldman partner, Linnea Conrad, part of Goldman Sachs and a member of 20 NGOs. Later on, 99.61% of Singular Logic stock went to something called Space Hellas. All their debts, by the way, were written off. Controlled mostly by Microsoft. The main shareholders are BlackRock and Vanguard. Another way of saying the Rothschild family, BlackRock of course controls Vanguard, can, through space Hellas, manage the results of all current elections. All Greek governments up until this point have said singular logic has been the reliable partner for 30 years. And they charge huge fees. The fee for the 2013 elections was 3 million euros. I can't get too deep into this. That's just a glimpse into what's going on. It gives some indication of why the same people just get reelected, even though, you know, they know that they're lying. Eurostat found that a third of Greek citizens were living in poverty by 2016. The point of these austerity measures was that foreigners eventually bought the country. The total volume of this, it's not investment, they're simply buying it out. About 1 billion euros, but no one voted for these people. I mean, there's other factors here, you know, endless propaganda, a single media narrative. But even if that fails, those counting the Greek votes are working with Greece's enemy. The thing is, the Greek numbers back then are very much like American numbers today. So to say that this is a matter of institutional corruption on a mass scale is not quite capturing it. But this is what happens when oligarchy rules rather than markets, which is very congenial to the euro, not to the drachma. Back in 2018, William Engdahl wrote this. With great fanfare, at the end of June, the 19 EU Eurozone finance ministers announced an end to the 8-year-long Greek debt crisis that brought the entire euro structure to its deepest crisis to date. The exercise is a deep deception. EU ministers refused to write off any Greek state debt. Instead, they did destructive interest capitalization of the existing debt, similar to what Washington did to Latin America in the 80s. What in fact is going on, you might justifiably ask, under this new scheme, the due date for loan repayments will be extended by 10 years. Loan write-offs are off the table. So Eurozone ministers agreed to extend maturities by 10 years, on a public debt, by the way, that's still now over 180% of GDP, despite all the cutbacks and all the so-called reforms. That's the power of this combine. We talk about the European Central Bank, the IMF, European Commission, that has the power of Wall Street behind it, whether it be BlackRock or Goldman Sachs. Crisis was exacerbated at the very beginning of this by Goldman's then CEO, Lloyd Blankfein. He was the one who figured out the debt swap method to hide the extent of Greece's debt, but in the process doubled it. And only a Jew could think of this. It's so complicated that most in the Greek finance ministry don't know what's going on. It's not something a normal person can think of. But it is predatory lending using methods that are way beyond even an economics professor's understanding. I said at the beginning, they're trying to disguise their economic troubles, going back as far as 2001. The Maastricht Treaty required all Eurozone members to show improvement in their public finances, but Greece was heading in the wrong direction. So Goldman Sachs comes around, arranging a secret loan of almost 3 billion euros off the books, and it's off the books because they called it a cross-currency swap. Very complex transaction. Greece's foreign currency debt was converted into a domestic currency obligation using a fictitious market exchange rate that they created. As a result, 2% of Greece's debt magically disappeared from the accounts. Goldman, by the way, got 600 million euros for that one swap. To this day, Greek economists have no idea what it really was or how it was done. Again, normal people don't think of these kind of things. And we're still back in 2001. The deal turned sour. 9/11 happened. Bond yields plunged. Big losses for Greece because the formula Goldman had used to compute the country's debt repayments under the swap didn't take that into consideration. So by 2005, Greece owed about more than double of what it had put into the deal. It was still off budget, but someone eventually is going to find it. Maybe it's not a coincidence that Mario Draghi, then head of the ECB, a major player in this drama, was then managing director of Goldman's International Division. And by the way, Fortune magazine called him the world's second greatest leader in 2015. Strangely enough, Tim Cook of Apple was first. Taylor Swift was sixth. So, you know, it's like you dream this stuff. Until 2008, the accounting rules allowed member nations to manage their debt with off-market rates in swaps, which was pushed by Goldman and other Wall Street institutions. J.P. Morgan did the same thing with Italy at the same time. A lot of off-the-book stuff. So that's pretty much how they lied about their status. Now, the way the U.S. lies is very different. We've talked about that before. It has to do with computations rather than these swaps. But again, I'm radically oversimplifying it. It gets a lot more complex than that. Now, there's no doubt Greece had years of corruption and tax avoidance by its oligarchy after the fall of the military government. Goldman Sachs leveraged the Greece to the hilt. But the bubble has to burst eventually. And that just means that the world becomes even more enthralled to Wall Street. Banks there got bailed up by American taxpayers. The banks became profitable again using our money. Bank shares went through the roof. I mean, Goldman shares were trading at $53 a share in November 2008. And it was $200 a share in 2018. Massive salary increases across the board. Blankfein made $24 million in 2017. Didn't end there, though. Alexis Tsipras, his government agreed to even more austerity, more taxes and pension cuts by 2019 and beyond. Greece has the highest unemployment rate in the entire EU. 8 years after the austerity began, the economy contracted in total, contracted by 25%. Even 20% unemployment is a very low estimate. Youth unemployment is 40%. Pension social welfare programs are gone. But those that remain have been cut by 70%. As Greek debt has gone through the roof. The point isn't to assist the Greeks. It's to simply loot the country. Greece passed all kinds of anti-union laws. These people apparently voted for this. Banned all industrial strikes, enabling mass dismissals, all that, as I mentioned. And all this was supposed to give a 3.5% budget surplus by 2022, which, of course, that never occurred, because they've been condemned to permanent debt servitude. And the debt goes up every year. It took a while for the scam, the Goldman scam, to be revealed, because it was a continuous thing. It was a temptation that was hard to resist. Even in 2009, Papandreou revealed the existence of a 10 billion euro concealed debt deferment by Goldman Sachs. But of course, he did the exact same thing. Most of the debt is owed to German, French, and Dutch banks. Interest rates for Greece was now 40%, something like that. At the time, the IMF general manager was Christine Lagarde. As many of you know, I've spoken about her before. She lied. She said the austerity wasn't a bad thing because the Greek state gives Greeks way too much social protection, despite the fact that they pay no taxes. Neglecting to point out that wage earners and retired persons in Greece have their taxes withheld at the source. In other words, they're withheld. So since they don't do the income stuff, They don't have to fill it out, the income taxes, like Americans do. They don't pay any taxes, according to her. And every government that comes in engages in another currency off-market swap with Goldman Sachs or some other Jewish group. But then that gets exposed, and that just adds to the debt. There's no rescue money going to Greeks. It went into the European financial sector. Then after COVID, of course, the same taxpayers had to then finance the banks again. EU citizens were told the money was to solve the Greek crisis. It wasn't. It was to bail out now the banks who were continually taking money from them. Despite the 300 billion euro aid package more recently to deal with the Greek state crisis, debt is still 180% of GDP. Far worse than at the beginning. Apparently, the Germans earned $3 billion on Greek bonds. A handful of hedge fund speculators did very well on this. But 47 billion euros were funneled to recapitalize the four largest Greek banks. But that has nothing to do with the average Greek person. A group of foreign investors were able to buy up 74% of the share ownership of these recapitalized banks at a fraction of the price, 5 billion euros. And Greek investors were prohibited from investing at all. Greece was never bailed out. And those, you know, Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Greece, Spain, all these other cases, there were rescue packages not for even local banks, but for French and German banks, or Jewish banks. Eric Toussaint was given a confidential IMF document in the Greek bailout that stated, documents provided the decision of the IMF on May 9th, 2010 to lend $30 billion to Greece, which is, by the way, 32 times the sum normally available to the country, was as clearly expressed by several executive directors, primarily aimed at getting French and German banks out of trouble. So there was no bailout, there was no Greek bailout whatsoever. Rather, they had their wages forced down, education cut to the bone. Doing all of this will never make an economy dynamic, but that was never the intention anyway. You're talking about the destruction of Greece as a nation, a long-standing goal of those who ran the EU in the first place. It's another version of the Weimar system. Did reparations ever assist Germany in becoming a dynamo? No, it just makes everything worse. A person by the name of Sidney Farghalli in the International Policy Digest in 2020 said this. Despite bailouts from the ECB totaling more than 300 billion euros, one of them being the largest sovereign debt restructuring in history, money went towards paying off Greece's international loans and quelling market fears that the eurozone itself could be dismantled. Thus, the eurozone has made it clear that the assurance of the euro's health has occurred at the cost of the well-being of Greece. As a result, Greece's real GDP has contracted more than 25%. The country eventually defaulted in 2015 on a 1.6 billion euro debt payment to the IMF, making it the first and only developed country to do so. These bailouts only brought time for other European countries and their banks to distance themselves from Greece's financial problems, which had been displayed by their ensuing actions as they refused to help the country during the humanitarian crisis that followed. This is a prime example of the issue with priorities of non-sovereign transnational currencies. It does nothing to stabilize and support individual members who are struggling, but everything to assure those who are thriving. Now, this person wrote this in the midst of COVID. COVID just added even more GDP deletion to Greek life. But, you know, what does a rational leadership in Greece or anywhere else do in a massive economic crisis like this? What do you think you do? What's your first goal? Well, it seems that the first goal is to import millions of hostile migrants. That makes sense, right? Well, due to its geography, Greece has become a huge gatekeeper to Europe, its proximity to the Middle East and North Africa. It doesn't have the money to guard the coastline. It's an ideal entry point for illegal migrants, so-called refugees. Greece is primarily a transit point. It still shoulders the majority of the burden in processing, monitoring, and housing new arrivals. It can't house, process, and monitor its own people. Christa Jodoin wrote in 2015 that Greece's slide into economic depression coincided with an uptick in irregular migration to the Eastern Mediterranean. She goes on to show how the massive increases, 2013, 2014, a 725% increase in 2 years, and that continued to go up. You know, there's been wars in the Middle East for decades. Never before did we have a migrant crisis in Europe. This is being created by somebody. And I'm even blaming the Turks for this. There is no fuel for the Coast Guard. Everything has been cut. So everybody pretty much is illegal there. Every once in a while you'll find a fraudulent academic saying this has been beneficial for Greece. There's an unsigned article in the Economy and Migration Insider that's so arrogantly, you know, well, I'll just say it. They suggest that European economies, including the Greek, are facing labor shortages that can be addressed by migration. There's no way they don't know the massively high unemployment rates in Greece. And that's normal. That dominates establishment publications. Human Rights Watch says any attempt to defend Greece from this invasion needs to be punished. It's another reason why a coup is needed. It's one cause out of many, but accepting hostile, mostly male migrants in huge numbers is an immense cost, and it's harmed the Greek economy. And the crimes they commit, as well as the strain on social services, which are almost zero to begin with, make matters far worse. Now, the Syriza, the so-called opposition group, who did whatever the IMF told them to do, opened up the borders completely. They ordered the Greek police to cease detaining illegal migrants. Assuming the police even have the money anymore. The Greek City Times reported in 2023. And we're talking about crime here. From January to the end of October 2019, 33,729 Greek nationals and almost 30,000 migrants were arrested for criminal offenses. Rape offenses, 92 arrests, January to October of 2019, 55 were migrants. Theft and burglary, there were 9,000 of these, 3,000 were of migrants. Vehicle theft, arrest for robberies. You know, they're not a huge chunk of the population, even then. But they're almost equal in terms of these crimes. For drugs, 13,000 arrests. Of those, 4,410 were migrants. Despite their small numbers in the population relative to all of Greece, they're driving crime through the roof with all the costs that are included there. They are a hostile invading army that Europe for centuries fought against, the classical world, the medieval world. However, admitting more hostile migrants was a demand of the regime's bailout programs. The economic costs to this are staggering. When you slash social programs to the bone and areas are flooded with migrants who claim to need these, there's very little left for anybody else. It's a never-ending cycle. I'm going to quote Paul Craig Roberts here. He wrote this in 2018. The political and media cover-up of the genocide of the Greek nation began with the European Union and other political statements announcing that the Greek crisis is over. What they mean is that Greece is over, dead and done with, has been exploited to the limit, and the carcass has been thrown to the dogs. 350,000 Greeks, mainly young professionals, have fled. The birth rate is far below the rate necessary to maintain sustaining remaining populations. The austerity imposed on the Greek people by the EU, the IMF, and the Greek government has resulted in the contraction of the Greek economy by 25%. Decline is the equivalent of America's Great Depression. But in Greece, the effects were worse. President Roosevelt, at least, softened the impact. Massive unemployment with the Social Security Act and other elements of a social safety net. Deposit insurance, public works programs, the Greek government following orders, IMF and EU destroyed all of those. So obviously, IMF austerity doesn't work, but the question is, work for whom? It's hard for people to wrap their brains around the fact that places like Ukraine or Kosovo or Greece or Portugal, they're not independent countries anymore. They're controlled by their creditors. The methods of the IMF are meant to worsen the crisis. They're in a far worse position than they were at the beginning. All they had to do was write down part of the amount owed back when it was 129% of GDP. It's 180% of GDP in 2025. Every country in the world, China bought Greek seaports, Germany brought its airports. Various German and European entities bought the Greek municipal water companies. Real estate speculators from all over the world bought the protected Greek islands for real estate development. Total plunder of Greek public property. And none of it went to reducing the debt. It just went along with new loans to paying interest. Claiming that it's over is ridiculous. It just means that there's nothing left to extract. You can't add any more austerity. There's nothing left to pay. Greece, hence, is a dying society. Something that, by the way, the military government had foreseen. All the income associated with whether it's seaports, which are big there, the airports, municipal utilities, the rest of public property, forcibly privatized, now belong to foreigners who take the money out of the country, damaging the Greek economy even further. As I've said 10 million times, what is capitalism? Who succeeds in capitalism in the postmodern world? It's the entity that can privatize costs. Privatize profits while socializing costs. It has nothing to do with markets. It has nothing to do with demand. It's being able to privatize as much many profits as you can while socializing as many costs as you can. Greeks have had their economic future stolen from them. They have no sovereignty. It's not a sovereign nation. They are ruled by the EU and the IMF. It didn't matter what party was in government, they all did the same thing. There were revolts and everything else, but they went nowhere. They accepted their own destruction. The Greek population committed mass suicide. The only way out is to leave the EU and NATO, make peace with Turkey, orient their economy towards Russia and China. Given the mess that liberal democracy has made out of Greece since the 1960s, if not before, a coup is an important first step in recovery. Otherwise, these poorer countries in the Eurozone are doomed. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.